Welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Jessie Lowry, the Director of Conservation and Research here. And today we have a very special guest to talk about one of my favorite animals in the entire world, the orangutan. And Richard, welcome to the show. And you're the Executive Director of Orangutan Outreach, is that right?
Yes, that
okay.
is correct.
Wonderful. Well, we're so excited to talk to you today about your organization. And I always like to start off the podcast by just talking for a few minutes about the modern role of accredited zoos in saving animals in the wild. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. What I see the zoo is as a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community to come in and see these amazing animals that we have. We don't have orangutans, but we have some pretty awesome creatures here. And we want to really turn that sense of awe that our community gets when they come to the zoo and sees these animals into a real conservation action, something that's actually going to make a difference to wildlife and wild places around the world. And Blank Park Zoo works on conservation in many different ways. And our public can work on conservation in many different ways. We really encourage everyone to be as sustainable as possible in their everyday lives, to decrease their use of single-use plastic, and we try to be as sustainable as we possibly can in our daily operations. We support field projects around the world, including International Rhino Foundation, Giraffe Conservation Foundation, Snow Leopard Trust. And a portion of every single dollar that Blank Park Zoo makes goes to save animals in the wild and goes to these projects. We also send our staff to the field to help those field projects, those heroes out on the front lines in the range countries of the animals, to help with field research and conservation work around the world. And so even though we're a small zoo, we've still got an audience of 500,000 people a year, and we do our very best to make an impact on conservation around the world. And so I went to a conference in Columbus a couple months ago, and it was the Zoos and Aquariums Committing to Conservation Regional Conference, and also a conference called Finding Your Voice. And I met a woman by the name of Debbie from your organization, Richard, and she connected us. And when I met Debbie, I told her that orangutans are my favorite animal, and they really are. So I am especially excited to talk to you today. So welcome again to the show, Richard.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. And hearing that orangutans are your favorite, that's even better.
Wonderful. Well, can you tell us a little bit about orangutan outreach and a little bit about your background?
Okay. Well, I started orangutan outreach in 2007. And we are a registered 501c3 nonprofit based out of New York. And it started as a labor of love. I've loved orangutans my entire life. I didn't go into biology academically. I was more of a history and political science guy, and later linguistics and education, and I've been all over. But orangutans were always very, very special to me. And I knew they were endangered, but it wasn't until about 15 years ago, or gosh, almost 20 years ago now, that I realized and really internalized the extent to which they could literally be extinct. And it was something I just couldn't accept. And, you know, I did my best to help existing organizations at the time, with small donations here and there, helping with my skill sets and such, but I saw that not enough was being done, and I just felt compelled to do more. So I started the organization, and it grew and grew. It's still kind of amazing to think that it's around, and I'm still doing this, you know, a dozen years later. but it's really the kind of thing that, you know, it's passion. And it's just doing everything I can to save these amazing creatures who I love so much.
I have to interject because that's exactly the way that I feel about great apes. And I can tell you that great apes are the reason why I have the career that I have. And, you know, they were the inspiration for me. And so I know exactly what you feel. And I felt when I was, you know, in high school, learning about the plight of the great apes, just kind of a feeling of desperation almost of, I cannot believe this is happening to these amazing, intelligent creatures. These are our closest relatives. When you look at them, you can just, obviously you can just tell that there's so much, you know, so much intelligence, so much in their soul. And so I really am happy that to hear that you had that same feeling and that you've created this amazing project.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's just, you know, it's almost hard to explain sometimes to people. You know, when you look in their eyes and you see them, a mother and a baby or a big mouth cheek patter, just they're so magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
And you communicate with them and they communicate with you if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yet without words. But there's some exchange that happens and you fall in love with them. And once you've felt it, you can't not feel it.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Oh, yes. It definitely does.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I first realized that I was extremely passionate about great apes, it was because I read The Great Ape Project. Have you read that book?
Oh, yeah. I have a copy of it right here.
Great. Yep. That was
a while ago, huh?
That was a long time ago. Yeah. Did I just age myself a little bit?
Well, I'm further ahead than you. So no worries.
And of course, Jane Goodall really, really inspired me.
Our patron saint.
Yes. So tell us about Orangutan Outreach and your organization.
All right. Well, it started as a website, really, way back in 2007. Before the onslaught of social media.
Mm-hmm.
And it was meant literally to bring outreach for orangutans. At the time, I'd been working at UNICEF in New York City, and the big buzzword was outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And in all of my spare moments, spare thoughts, I thought, wow, the orangutans need outreach.
Mm-hmm.
It had that alliteration. And so I went ahead and did it. And what I did was link up first with a group called Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation, or BOSS, or mm-hmm. BOSF. And it was meant just to raise funds for their operations in Indonesia, in Borneo, based on a TV show hopefully some of the listeners have seen called Orangutan Island
mm-hmm.
on Animal Planet. So it was really just a testament of a blog about loving orangutan in a way with a donate button
mm-hmm.
and an ability to adopt orangutans online virtually. That's the humble origins of it.
To find all those other people that feel the same way about orangutans that you and I do.
Yes. And then, you know, this is before Facebook, you know, before Twitter, before instant communication via social channels. So it was almost just this outpost online
mm-hmm.
for people to come who loved orangutans. And over the years, it grew, and it developed with the times. And as an organization, we began supporting other groups on the ground, and we expanded to support SOCP, the Sumatran Orangutan Conservation Program in Sumatra. We helped another partner, International Animal Rescue, create a brand new orangutan rescue center in the western part of Kalimantan, Borneo. So it's expanded over the times, sometimes growing a little too thin, spreading too thin, but
mm-hmm.
but also really just trying to help wherever there were good people on the ground doing good work to help orangutans. You know, it sounds abstract, but to help any orangutan who was in need at an mm-hmm. individual level,
mm-hmm.
Because as the forests were being destroyed, you know, you had infants being taken into the illegal pet trade, and you had just the slaughtering of adult orangutans, and all of these infants needed somewhere to be brought
mm-hmm.
when they were confiscated. So supporting these rescue centers in different parts of Indonesia, in different parts of Borneo, which was absolutely critical, because a lot of us tend to think, oh, orangutans, like they're all in one little place, but mm-hmm. it's spread out, and there's whole populations that were in need of support. And fortunately, I was able to steer orangutan outreach in a way that could help more orangutans, different areas.
That is amazing. So I'm sure that you work with Mark Ankrenes.
He's up in Malaysia, so yeah. I know Mark. His
yeah.
work's amazing.
Yeah.
But Orangutan Outreach is specifically sending funds to the Indonesian side of
Borneo. Sure. Okay.
But Mark does amazing work. And in the news right now, some of the efforts to use satellite technology to sense the orangutan nests and find where they are and count them is just, it's brilliant.
It's,
part of my background is high tech, so it's just, seeing the use of technology like that, just, I love it.
Yes, those technology things are so exciting, where
yeah.
they can, actually extrapolate the direction of where a poacher's bullet originated from.
Ooh,
it's really,
yeah.
really neat stuff.
Yeah.
So tell us about why do these orangutans need to be rescued? What's happening in their natural habitat?
Well, the forests are being destroyed or have been destroyed in many cases. They're just gone. Just for people who are really new to this, orangutans are only in two places, the islands of Borneo and Sumatra. Borneo is mainly Indonesia, but there's about a quarter of it or a third of it is Malaysian. They're only in these two places. And these happen to be the same places where over the years there was a lot of, we'll call it what it is, corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Extraction of natural resources and the deforesting, the taking of the timber from these forests at an industrial scale has led over the years to massive, massive loss of biodiversity.
And it's happening quickly.
Oh, it's so fast. As of 20 years ago, we saw the rise of palm oil, which now I think a lot of people have at least heard of, but for many years people that we would come across were unsure what the palm oil was or where it came from. It sounded, Miami or Malibu, it sounded nice.
Mm-hmm.
But basically these forests, massive, massive forests that are home to orangutans and tigers and elephants and rhinos and such biodiversity were being just destroyed. And the timber was being extracted. And what was left was burned,
mm-hmm.
just dumping carbon into the atmosphere, leading to global warming and smoke inhalation issues among hundreds of thousands of humans. And what was left was then replanted with oil palm in order to produce palm oil, which is now, and I don't know what the exact number is, maybe half the ingredients on store shelves. It's in cookies and shampoo and soap and biodiesel, everything. And so it basically became a cash crop and a monoculture.
Mm-hmm.
And without good governance and without law enforcement, whole swaths of jungle were just knocked down, along with the populations of animals living there. Mm-hmm. And often the human populations had to be removed. And this is at a scale, the number we used to use was from like the UNEP. 6 football fields a minute were being destroyed.
Six football fields a minute.
It's hard to even get our heads around something like that, of the level of destruction. And these were the only forest homes of orangutans. Again, if you were to talk to people from the tiger conservation and the elephant conservation and the rhino conservation, the gibbon conservation ad infinitum, everyone has a perspective on it. We as orangutan outreach, we can only fight so many battles.
Uh-huh.
And our concern was to protect as many of the orangutans as possible in their forests. Because what's the use of orangutans not in forests? Orangutans
mm-hmm.
need forests.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want them in cages and in mm-hmm. rescue centers. We want them in forests,
mm-hmm.
safe, and breeding. So basically, orangutan outreach's mission has been to do whatever we can politically to protect the forest and to, at the same time to raise funds for partners on the ground who are taking in these rescued and displaced orangutans and caring for them, giving them medical attention and rehabilitating the little ones so they can eventually be returned to the forest. And, this is a long-term project
mm-hmm.
because, a baby orangutan needs 7-8 years of rehabilitation before they're even close to having the skill set where they can actually go back into the wild and have a have a fair chance of surviving.
They need to learn how to be an orangutan.
Yeah, basically. Fortunately, we've seen that instinct kicks in.
Good.
You know, it's almost like they know where they belong. And they, once they reach a certain age and level, you know, of independence psychologically, they're ready to go. Hmm. And that's something we've seen in the last, since around 2012. So about half the life of Orangutan Outreach as an organization, we've been fortunate to be able to fundraise for releases and not just rescues and rehab.
Wow.
The releases, it's really the end game of getting them back out there and having these rehabilitated orangutans go into the wild, function, and not just survive, but actually thrive and reproduce is incredible. I mean, it's gratifying in a selfish way. You think, yes. But at the same time, when you think about, we're like fighting history. Mm-hmm. We're pushing back. And we're creating, you know, again, the we is the bigger we, mm-hmm. to outreach and all of our partners and the individual people on the ground who are doing this. We're creating new populations. It's very, as you can tell, I get excited when I talk about it.
Can you take us through what it's like to release an orangutan who has been with your organization and been rehabilitated?
Yes, it takes years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, just as a caveat, there are some cases where a forest is being destroyed legally by treaty or by contract, and the organization, the partner on the ground, will get a call saying there's orangutans in the forest, come get them. This forest is slotted to be knocked out.
Wow.
As nefarious as that sounds, it's just business. So the teams will go get the orangutans to the best of their ability, and these are often, you know, big male orangutans, rescue them and translocate them to new areas of forest.
Okay.
So you have those situations actually going on regularly. Mm. The more difficult ones, which I think you're asking really about, is when an infant is brought in who's been confiscated from the pet trade,
mm-hmm.
they will obviously go through veterinary care and make sure they're healthy. And then for our partners, BOSS, Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation, or International Animal Rescue, or Sumatran Orangutan Conservation Program, those orangutans will go into what we like to call forest school, or baby school, uh-huh. if they're really little. And they begin to learn how to be orangutans. They're literally taught with their human caregivers, who have been doing it now for decades, and each other. So they learn how to climb. They learn how to brachiate, how to move around in the trees, how to build nests, how to search for food, what to eat, how to socialize with one another. And this goes on for years. And they literally, like humans, they go from kindergarten to elementary school to junior high. And as they develop and get the skill sets, they progress. And very rarely are they unable to progress. The little ones, nature takes over. They grow and develop, you know, except when there's hardship cases of injuries and such. But they eventually get to the point where they're in what we would call university or college, and they have less human interaction. And they're usually still in their groups, and they're often on an isolated island, which is protected on, you know, within the grounds of the sanctuaries.
Okay.
And they're monitored just to make sure they're eating and doing their thing, but they're not cared for like mm-hmm. like they were in jungle school. And as they grow more independent, you know, the observers will go out and see, they're becoming more adapted or acclimated to the wild, and then they get basically put on the short list for being released. And they'll be brought back to a center and go through intense medical testing to make sure, you know, God forbid they are carrying a human pathogen or something that you would never want reintroduced into a wild population.
Sure.
Or sent out into the wild, you know, like tuberculosis or hepatitis or something. And once they've passed their tests and they've demonstrated the right skill sets, they're released. And I've been fortunate to go on one release with International Animal Rescue. And it's a long, 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 long drive usually, because it's going deep into the interior, into the national parks, far away from most people.
Yeah.
You know, there's often villages near there, which is a whole other issue of actually bringing these villagers into the whole process and employing them and giving them stakes. So they're actually stakeholders in the whole process. But the orangutans, after making this journey, and it's often literally hours and hours on the roads and up rivers and boats, and sometimes even involving helicopters, depending on the exact location of the release, the cage is opened. And they fly out of the cage, of course.
They don't wait for you to say, okay, now it's time to go?
I guess some of them are a little more lethargic. You know, depends, you know, on individual circumstances. But the vast, vast majority just, boom. I mean, it's like a bullet shooting out of that cage. They do look back. And there's stories I've heard of them making eye contact with certain caregivers or certain people. You know, and the nod here or there, and they fly into the trees, and then they look back, like, is this real? Like, I'm not coming back. As you know, orangutans say so much with their eyes, so there's no doubt. But then they go off, they do their thing. You know, again, they're in groups often, so it's a whole different thing. They've been socialized in groups. And then there's a whole post-release monitoring process involved.
Okay.
To make sure, obviously, that they're doing all right, that they're healthy. And most of them are, but some have trouble. Some have issues. Some get sick. Some have died.
Do they have radio transmitters or any way for you to track them?
Yes. Okay. Yes. They have transmitters implanted. And those, you know, so they can be followed by radio waves. And, you know, again, they spread out. Now we're starting to look into ways of monitoring using satellites and using drones to pick up the signals because, you know, it's just people on the ground having to follow them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, being a North American living in New York, you know, going into the forest is not easy. It's another planet. Even for people who have adjusted to it or are from that area. It's still not easy to follow an orangutan because they're in the trees and you're often having to, you know, slog through swamps at night in the rain. And, you know,
which sounds amazing to me, but a lot of people don't like that, I've heard.
Well, it's kind of, yeah. You know, everyone has their own opinion. I think the romance ends quickly. You know, again, the humidity itself is quite the experience. But then when the rain comes, and then, you know, it depends what's creeping and crawling and slithering.
But when you see that orangutan, you know, burst out of that crate like a bullet, it just makes all the hard work worth it. I'm sure that there wasn't a dry eye in the bunch.
When X amount of time later, when there's a baby, it's just, oh my God, it's like proof that it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, it's all new. There is no longitudinal research yet that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just knowing that somehow we were able to rescue this baby, raise the baby, get the baby back into the forest. You know, it's not as nature intended necessarily. You know, it's not as things should be in a perfect world, but it's the best we can do, I think, as humans, as good humans, intervening on behalf of another species, which I don't know how much more we can ask for, you know?
And that's what I want to ask you about next. With all of your experience, with your knowledge of what's happening on the ground, and, you know, your knowledge of the challenges, what should people do to help save orangutans?
Oh, $1 million question. Awareness is absolutely critical. Knowing that there are orangutans, that they need to be protected, that there are forests, that there is a place called Indonesia where they are, or Malaysia. It sounds flippant, but it's not. You know, we live in an age where there's so much information and so much flow in our news feeds and social media where it's hard to compete with all of that. So, mm-hmm. first of all, eyeballs, getting people aware. And let me just, as a side, say that we have a new series coming called Orangutan Jungle School, which was filmed at Bosnia Romenteng, the biggest rescue center in the world. The same people who made Orangutan Island 10 right. years ago have been filming this one. And it's about to premiere in the U.S. on the Smithsonian Channel in August.
Great.
It's been around the world over the last year. And it details in gorgeous, gorgeous footage this process of retraining and rehabilitating the orangutans. And that's coming soon. And there will be it's just stunning to watch the process and see these individuals learning how to climb and building their nests and acclimating to the wild.
I think people are really going to enjoy watching that process.
Oh, my God, yes. It's just beautiful footage. The photographers love the orangutans. The video guys, they're in love with the orangutans, and you see it in the footage. But that's the sort of thing where you can start raising awareness and people can see something like that or any shows on orangutans, really.
And Richard, we have about 2 minutes left. So I just want to make sure that we circle back quickly and let us know what we should do about the palm oil issue as well. Is the sustainable palm oil okay for us to purchase? And how do people reduce their use of non-sustainable palm oil in their lives?
It's a tough one because sustainable palm oil isn't always sustainable.
Okay.
It's a step in the right direction,
okay.
But we have to make sure that palm oil is certified deforestation-free, mm-hmm. that the forest was not destroyed for it, that animals were not harmed for it, and we have to push back as consumers mm-hmm. that ask questions, demand answers from these companies. You know, these are billion-dollar corporations. You know, it's not a mom-and-pop shop. This is PepsiCo. These are big, giant corporations that we need to go on social media and demand accountability and, to the best of our knowledge, learn where it comes from and shop accordingly. You know, you're not going to boycott palm oil. That's never going to work. It's not even a reasonable answer. Mm-hmm. But do your best to just be aware and spread the news and let more people know, because the more people who know and say something, then the companies react. That's really the best thing we can do at this point.
That sounds...
And then support orangutan conservation.
Yep.
It's really, you know, you go to our website, redapes.org, adopt an orangutan. You know, it's $10 a month where you can help a real orangutan who's going through this rehabilitation process, or even some who aren't releasable. And that's a whole other podcast mm-hmm. of what's going to happen with the hundreds of orangutans who can't be released. How are they going to live? Who's going to care for them? These are the questions we're thinking as we look 5-10 years down the line, 20 years down the line even. How do you care for hundreds of big male orangutans who can't be released into the wild?
Richard, I just want to say that hearing from you, hearing your story about the amazing work that you and your team are doing, it really does give me hope. This podcast probably went quicker than any other podcast I've ever done. And so I hope that you will come back and do another one with me, because I think we have a lot more to talk about. Please tell us what your website is again.
First of all, I would be happy to.
Great.
Anytime you want, I'm here. Our website, Orangutan Outreach, redapes.org, redapes.org.
Redapes.org. Thank you so much, Richard. And
thank
that is
you,
all. Thank you so much. And I hope we get to meet someday. That's all the time that we have for today on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. Please go to blankparkzoo.com to learn about all the projects that we support, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.